Howard Lindzen is the founder and general partner at Social Leverage. All opinions expressed by Howard and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Social Leverage or StockTwits. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for decisions. Guests may maintain positions and securities discussed in this podcast.
K-Nut.
Hey, Howard. How are you?
I'm good. We got a special guest in studio.
Yes, we
do. Nikita, say hello.
Hi, guys.
So Nikita is a person. We had never known. We hired her at Social Leverage without ever meeting her. Could have been an avatar. Could have been a young Filipino boy, because I have a lot of young Filipino fans. But it turns out she looks exactly like your photo. And I thought in a millennial era, or are you at millennial or Gen Z?
I'm millennial.
So sometimes, according to you, people don't look the same as their photo on these dating sites. So we didn't know what to expect. How come you're so honest on the internet? Do you think that benefits you?
I don't know.
So Nikita puts out her best self on the internet. Tell people a little bit about yourself now that you're here. You've done a few podcasts with us now.
Yes.
So Nikita is working at Social Leverage. And you have not been on a flight in...
16 months.
Yeah, so she came over from Vancouver. 4 flights only yesterday?
Yeah.
From Vancouver to the United States. So the world is still... If you're in Canada, it's shut down still, basically.
Mm-hmm. Like, it was interesting, right? Because I was at the Vancouver airport, and it was, like, super quiet and maybe 20 people. And then I land here, and it's, like, business as usual.
Yeah, as you can see... I think Arizona, I don't know if everybody's getting vaccines. There's still a lot of people that just won't take a Canute.
That's right.
But people are out.
Yeah.
And I think the outdoor life helps. So tell people a little bit about yourself.
Well,
age?
I'm 29.
But you've been there for 6-7 years. Height?
5'5".
Ooh.
So do I look my height?
Yeah, is that a good height for a woman?
I think so, since I'm that height.
So 5'5", and you are Indian.
Indian, yeah.
But I'm Canadian.
No, I was born and raised in India for 18 years.
Oh, you were? 18 years. I knew that. So born and raised 18 years, your parents moved to Canada.
Yeah.
And what got you into finance? Was it a boy? Was it a girl?
No, I think it was just trying to be an independent woman, and money gets you to be independent.
So your sister is like going to be a dentist?
Yes.
And your brother is highly motivated as well?
Yeah, he just graduated high school, and he's going into computer sciences this fall.
And so you got your degree, and then you went to go into banking?
Yeah.
And where'd you go?
So I went to BMO Capital Markets to work on the trading floor there. But when I was in university, I actually worked as a teller at CIBC. And I was such a fob as a first-year university kid that I wanted to be in finance. And, you know, I got this teller job. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, you know, I'm in. And I didn't realize that, like, retail is so different from institutional. But... it was one of the best jobs I did because I got to learn the basics of just like, you know, client relationship 101. So I think that even though it was super different from like institutional finance, but I think it was really helpful for, you know, training me to get there when I got there.
And then you moved to Vancouver.
Yeah.
And then how'd you end up? We became friends on Twitter because you were into SPACs.
Right.
Interest. So how did you end up with the SPAC job?
Well, I started following Chamath back in 2017 because one of my best friends, he runs a hedge fund, and he had just come after meeting Chamath, and he was like, oh my God, there's this new thing called SPACs, and this guy is like, you know, reinventing the wheel. And he had done his research and really liked him as a manager and like what he was trying to do. And so I kind of feel that I've known about SPACs for a really long time. And then last year, when all of us just were sitting idle and not doing anything, and SPACs were taking off, I kind of felt that I had a leg up on people because I'd known about it for so long.
So you started trading SPACs?
Yeah. But, well, you know where we were? You were talking about like we met on Twitter. And no, we didn't meet through SPACs.
Right.
The very first recollection for me is that I saw a picture of you getting pedicure with Rachel.
Oh, my God. And something about my toes intrigued you?
Well, no, it was just like, you know, you're so funny and honest. And that's how I remember, like, that was my first kind of thing that, like, you know, went into my memory in the Howard file.
Got it. And so we whooshed you away from SPAC life.
Yes.
Although you were, now, so what are you working on at Social Leverage?
So I am working on the fund side. We just finished raising our fund 4.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have a SPAC called Social Leverage Acquisition Corp. So I am busy on both sides.
And what's it like to work for Howard? That's a question from Knut. Knut, I'm asking the question you're handing me. How great is it? See, you wrote how great is it, and I made it more neutral.
How does it feel for you to work for Howard? I'll tell my story later.
You should tell a story.
Yeah, I think we should.
Oh, we have a guest?
Yeah, we do have a guest.
Oh, man. Okay, fine.
All right. We'll do it another time. But Nikita's now a regular on the show. And what's great for us is I want to talk about markets. And that's what today's show is about. I got my good friend who runs Compound. I'm in a partner of Charlie's.
We're not talking about boys today?
We can talk about boys.
Okay.
No, but this is Charlie's a boy.
Okay.
And he has a boy. He has kids. Charlie is a friend of mine. He's in New York. He was in episode 2 or 3, I think, of Panic with Friends during the heat of the panic. And if you go back and play it back, Charlie was and I were voices of reason, but Charlie went through the data. And if we go back and listen to the early March podcast, you'll see Charlie got a lot right. And so I figured it's time now that there's been all this euphoria and this kind of flippening again, like it's been a lot of parabolic moves over the last year. We're now into almost June of 2021. And I want to check back in with Charlie because we got inflation. We got a list of stuff to go over with Nikita and I and Charlie. And as the summer approaches, we've just seen those markets just kind of digest these incredible moves. But at the same time, we've had rolling crashes in many ways, like growth stocks, cloud, now crypto. And we've had, you know, incredible returns in retail. And energy, you know, we went from negative oil prices at one point during the crash to energy breaking out now. And I think oil back about 60 or 70 bucks. I'm not sure.
65.
And housing boom. So there's just one of the most incredible year and a halfs in markets. So I wanted to check back in with Charlie on a bunch of themes. He is the founder of Compound Capital Advisors. I'm a partner of Charlie's. We help high net worth people. And so let's get Charlie on the phone.
Sounds good.
What's up? How's it going, guys?
It's going. You met Nikita. You know Knut. We've got a bunch of stuff to dive right into. So I'm going to let Nikita ring off some themes and topics that I know you can riff on for us. And then we'll chime in where we seem appropriate.
All right.
And just first of all, how do you pronounce your last name? It's Bilello.
Yeah.
You say it fast.
Got it. Could say the Italian version, Bilello.
Oh, Bilello.
You spend a lot of time in Italy, Howard. You could say it the right way.
You know what? I learned a new Italian joke. I was golfing yesterday with a venture capitalist player. And I asked my friend on about an 8-footer for bird because I had a good round, what's the break? And he said it's Italian speedo, which means one ball outside. I never heard that. So now, I just think it was one of the funniest jokes, because Italians wear Speedos. But have you worn a Speedo, Charlie? Because this would affect whether we could do business
never.
Together.
Okay. If I have, you'll never see a picture of that.
And I think that's why we're partners, because that's all I wear. And,
true.
All right.
We got to balance each other out.
Balance the balls. Should we insert a Manscaped app right now? So, you've kind of... You're very popular on Twitter and obviously read a newsletter. You manage money and my money too. So how difficult have I been? Now that like you're one of the only people who knows what I'm like with my capital. Have I been a good client?
I haven't seen too much panic. Yeah, pretty consistent. You like to buy weakness, sell strength, you know, good habits.
See?
Gonna say positive.
I'm a pretty positive guy. So we have good rapport
Optimistic.
About how to think about
it's huge.
The world. So tell us what's going on. Nikita, what's the first subject we want to crack?
Well, I want to first talk about the topic of inflation. And Charlie, I know you have some thoughts around what the Fed means when they're saying that inflation is transitory. So why don't we start with tackling inflation?
Yeah, that's the hot button. And the Fed is right that that higher inflation may be transitory, but I think most people would agree that everything in markets and in life is transitory. So it's interesting to use that term because it's almost dismissive of what's going on. And I think what we're seeing today is a little bit different than the transitory inflation that perhaps we saw in 2011, 2012, and some other periods in the last 20 years. So really the dynamics around it are the definition, the very definition of inflation, the one that I prefer is too much money chasing too few goods. And that's precisely right what we've seen. You had an unbelievable situation where for a good part of last year and still going on in part today, although less of it today, people were being paid more not to work than to work. That's
still going on at restaurants. I'm seeing, I'm hearing.
Still going on.
Everywhere I go, I ask if that's a problem. And I would say 80% say, yes, it's a problem.
Right. So more money there. You got three rounds of stimulus that weren't dependent on job loss, right? So people didn't lose their jobs. They still got a stimulus payment. Not once, not twice, but three times. And the third time was the biggest check that we've seen so far was actually when we knew the pandemic was going to come to an end. But still, we threw that out there. So you have all of that money, just chasing a limited supply of goods. And that is leading to rising prices just at about everywhere you look. So if we start with things like, just basic, in the housing market, right? There's so much demand in the housing market. There's not enough supply. The price of lumber's up four times over the last year and just an unbelievable move there. You got copper at all-time highs. Crude oil is not near its all-time highs, but higher than the pre-pandemic levels, and we're just getting started on the reopening in terms of airlines. Or if you look at air travel, we're back to the highest levels since March 2020, and that's going to really continue throughout the summer. So that's one end of it. And then you have just other areas of inflation in general that the Fed doesn't really address, but asset price inflation is a big one, right? Home prices in the last year up 19% in the U.S. That's the highest rate of increase ever. They've more than doubled in the last 10 years. You have, of course, stocks at all-time highs. You have crypto before the last week, just pushing new highs every day. And you have just every single asset class, alternative asset class, from collectible cars to watches and NFTs and trading cards, experience price inflation, right? The used car market, I think, is a fascinating one as well, where you have prices up 30, 40, 50% in used cars over the last year. Again, limited supply, huge demand. So there's so much pent-up demand. The American consumer's never been in a better position than they are right now. And so we're seeing just an absolute boom in retail sales. I don't think anyone would have predicted this going in, but retail sales today are actually 20% above pre-pandemic level.
But I'm not spending. Are you spending more?
No.
So, Knut, are you?
No, not really.
You downsized. So it's weird. Like, I mean, maybe we're not the demo, Charlie, but like I find myself, I'm happy to spend, but I find myself hardly spending. But again, I'm not the country. I'm just one.
But it's also interesting because, we're both different demographics.
Yeah, we all are. But you're not spending. I'm not spending. I mean, I bought cars. So no, first time ever in my life, I bought cars. And those are big purchases.
There you go.
Yeah.
Car sales are pushing highs, right? And remember, some of this stuff is just getting started, right? As far as the summer travel season and things like that, which is great to see because we need that. But coming back to the original point, is inflation an issue, right? We haven't, Howard, you're old enough to remember inflation, but Nikita's certainly not, right? The younger generation is not fazed by inflation one bit. And the older generation's probably has forgotten it, right? We haven't seen real inflation that was problematic since the early 1980s. So I think the average American is dismissive of it or has forgotten it. The Fed's certainly dismissive of it. So this is a trend that could persist for longer, I think, than people realize. And it's going to really dictate markets and has implications for stocks and bonds. So we'll see. For now, the Fed is holding the line. They're saying, we don't need to do anything. It's going to come back down. We're going to keep rates at 0% through 2023. We're going to keep buying bonds. It's an incredible response, very different, right, than the Volcker and the Fed that we saw that was afraid of inflation, that really broke the back of inflation by raising rates to the high teens. in 1980, causing a recession, then causing another recession in 81, 82. So very different dynamic today. It's like, bring on the inflation. We're not afraid of it. Bring it on. And let's see what happens.
And maybe they're not afraid of it because kids don't need much. Like, you have an iPhone.
Yeah.
You've got your free apps. They've got YouTube. They don't have to get cable if they don't want. Like, a young person can live pretty lightweight. And like, my son lives with $5 because he knows he can get an immediate Venmo in an emergency or use Uber. You know what I mean? Like, they have wallets everywhere, and I just don't even think they... I was panicked reconciling my bank statement for 20 years as a ute because I owed Best Buy. Like, you know, we went through this. We owed Best Buy money. We could run up a tab. Mm-hmm. You don't even know this. You probably don't even have a... Do you have a credit card?
I do.
You do have a credit card?
I just one, yeah.
So kids today don't have credit cards, I don't think. They have debit cards. So they don't know what it's like to owe Best Buy $40,000. How the hell did Best Buy lend me 40? I mean, I had an MBA, but like, why were they wailing out $40,000 to me? I think they knew I paid. And interest rates were like 15% on those things, right? It wasn't like we were smart. But I think we were motivated by debt. We were scared of our credit score, and we knew we were going to buy a home, and we knew we were going to lease a car. So we had to keep the 700 credit score. So Best Buy was our government. Or not just Best Buy, where you could get a card at clothing or whatever. And back then you had to have four seasons of like suits if you had a job. You had a summer suit, a fall, like you had wool.
You had
shit in your closet. You had like dress shoes and regular. Now it's sneakers, couple Lulus, and your phone. So I'm just wondering, so maybe how you think about inflation just has to be different. But at the same price, like as you said, Charlie, you got lumber, you've got copper, you have oils, gas is $3.
$3 a gallon. Yeah.
$3. And that's real for middle America.
Yeah.
Yeah. Inflation is a tax. The biggest tax is on lowest income people. For higher income people, your asset prices going up, you might not care as much. Well, there's a certain level of inflation where it becomes problematic, and we haven't seen it just yet. And maybe it's not here right here and now, but when it comes, it's going to be problematic for those that don't have assets, that don't own homes yet, that have appreciated, that have to come into that market, that have to come into other markets. And high inflation, really high inflation, starts to impede growth. And that's when it becomes a concern. Right now, it's fine because we're going to see the highest real GDP we've seen since the early 1980s. Everyone's excited about that, and they should be. At what level does it start to cause problems for growth in the market? And you're right about the debt levels. For the consumer, doesn't have a high level of debt right now. They've actually saved a decent portion of the stimulus so far.
They're paying off their loans, like Encore Capital.
They're doing the opposite.
Yeah,
they're doing the opposite of what the government's doing, right?
Correct.
The government's borrowed $5 trillion in the past year, and looks like they're set to do a few more trillion in 2021, you know, with 6 months to go here. But the average American's doing the opposite, right? They're paying down their debt. I mean, they're in really good shape. So that's why this trend of high demand could continue a little bit longer, I think, than people are expecting. And we're seeing it in wages, which is a good thing. And if you look at wages as a percentage of corporate profits, you know, it hasn't moved in years, decades, really. But you're seeing signs of it, right? How many companies in the past few months have talked about raising their minimum wage, raising just compensation in general, giving bonuses? There's a shortage of labor, and for once, the employee is getting to be in the driver's seat. So, Nikita, I'd renegotiate whatever contracts that you have because the employee has the power right now.
Absolutely. No, I think this is all just TBD. I dare her.
If I'm able to renegotiate, then we know that inflation is not transitory.
She's not really on board. She's been negotiating this whole time, but yet still working for us for 6 months. That's the way Canadians go. They're just constantly negotiating. But what's interesting is, you know, all this talk, because I've seen it in my portfolio. I talk about my 8 to 80 stocks. These are generally growth companies and consumer brands that 8-year-olds know and 80-year-olds and buy and love. And it's been kind of flat to down for the last 5 to 6 months for my overall 8 to 80, which is a bulk of how I invest in public markets. And at the same time, there's a lot of 8 to 80 brands, whether it be Exxon or The Gap, that I don't associate with. that are in the background, right? Like the Gap, mm-hmm. I don't consider an 8-to-80 brand anymore just because they've missed e-commerce. Like I consider Shopify or the plumbing more 8-to-80. But
sure,
you know, all the chatter about meme stocks and crypto and everything, and like Ford's been a home run from the bottom. The Gap up 600% from the bottom or more. Nordstrom back from the dead. The markets still do their thing. Like we talk about inflation, but the markets have been pricing this in many different ways while everybody's been focused on Bitcoin, which, you know, is up a bazillion percent, then crashes 50%. You know, Wells Fargo has doubled in the last 6 months and Goldman Sachs is at all-time highs. So, you know, under the surface, the market's been voting and weighing. So it's really interesting, like inflation is being factored in the markets because growth is not something that gets hurt the most when people think inflation is going to go up.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a good segue into the general shift in trends that we've seen.
So let's talk about that, because this has been an incredible year. So like, let's walk through some of the shifts that you've seen.
Yeah. So if we go back to, let's go back to, nobody wants to go back there, but let's just go back for a second to February 2020, right? COVID is just hitting. Everyone's scared out of their minds. They're locking everything down. They're saying this is going to be the end of the world. The next Great Depression is coming, right? All of these things were supposed to be certainties back then. And what you had is a dynamic that really was the perfect situation to accelerate all of these trends that were going on pre-COVID. So January 2020, you had a number of secular trends going on in markets that were really dominating for a decade or more. So you had just the yields falling, yield curve flattening, all-time lows in yields headed before the pandemic, right? You had large cap companies dominating, tech dominating, growth dominating, U.S. stocks dominating, and commodities really underperforming. Then the pandemic hits, right? Great Depression's coming, and all of these factors just get accelerated. They're all positive
factors for the existing trends. But
they all crash on a relative basis, right?
So everything got correlated for 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Right. But initially, right, Howard, tech stood out, right? If you're going to have to stay at home, tech and growth is where you want to be. Because right? These are companies allowing you to continue what you're doing. Right?
Yeah. Those started showing strength right away. Zoom, Dr.
Yeah, Zoom, right? You added Zoom to 8-to-80 back then. And you know, a huge tailwind for Zoom, for Peloton, for all Amazon, right? You're literally shutting down their competitors. We talked about it last year. You're literally saying you can't open your store, but Amazon's open for business and they can deliver to your house every day, right?
Correct.
So initially, all of those trends just persisted, right? We saw all-time low in 10-year yields at 30 basis points. 30-year yields were below 1%. You know, so if there's going to be a depression, you want to buy large cap stocks because they could withstand it. Small companies with high debt loads, bad news, right? Commodities are going to get crushed if there's no one's traveling, no one's doing anything. We saw crude oil go negative. So all of these things made sense. And the thinking at the time was, well, this could persist for a while, right? Depression was 4 years, right? It's 29 to 33. This is going to be a long road out of it. And what was interesting is one by one, these things started to reverse. And initially, there really wasn't much of a rationale for it. It was just markets really starting to look ahead. And it started with the bond market. So you started to see yields just on the long end, at least, start to creep higher. The yield curve started to steepen a little bit. Then you had small companies start to rebound. Why is this going on? You had crude obviously capitulated with the negative crude futures. Then it starts slowly, gradually moving higher. And the big news, of course, came with the vaccine trials last fall and just positive news there. Okay, we're going to have a vaccine by the end of 2020. Yes, unbelievable speed. Not one, not two, three safe vaccines that are highly effective. And that really shifted the rest of the landscape. Now, all of a sudden, you have a dynamic where tech, it's not crashing just yet, but it's starting to go sideways, and energy and financials and material stocks are starting to take over. And then value, which has been crushed since 2006, value had been underperforming growth. 14 years of underperformance, and all of a sudden you see value, beaten down value stocks start to become popular in people's portfolio to the point where there's momentum in value stocks.
Yeah, I miss that. I would say of all the misses of the last 10 years, I guess I just stopped looking, right? Like give myself credit for staying out of it, but like Gap is a value stock theoretically compared to Shopify and Amazon.
Absolutely.
And yep. Nordstrom's a value stock. Ford's a value stock. Energy became value stocks. I love picking stocks. I just want to stay with names that I know that I'm going to buy. You know, my 8-year-old's buying it and 80-year-olds are buying it. But in the real world, in the real world of investing, money does move. And the big trade here was, and again, why I find it hard, Charlie, and this is why asset allocation is important for most, especially wealthy people. You know, I still believe young people should just take risk because I got such a long time cycle. But once you have wealth, asset allocation becomes important because it's not fun to miss these moves. Because, and I can't pick a stock because I don't know when Gap really is going to bottom and get their shit together versus it's just money moving into value. Like, has Gap gone up and Exxon gone up just because money's moving into value? Or are there real turn? I can't predict those things because I don't shop there. I haven't seen my kids talk about the Gap in 20. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't have feel.
The fundamentals have changed, right? And that may not persist. And you're betting that, you know, the secular trends in the 8 to 80 brands over the next 10 years will be better than Exxon.
You're also betting while you're like working from home. So you're in that mindset of like work from home.
I don't even Nordstrom should even be, I thought it would have been a good for the world if Nordstrom, not because they're a horrible company, but like, do we need Nordstrom in a world of Amazon? I guess we do. Or I guess Nordstrom has a second chance because the stock's acting like it's fantastic out there.
Yeah, like we were all, that's what I think, that like we're still sitting and working from home, and yet there's this like huge bid for the reopening trade.
Yeah.
So it's like both happening in a way simultaneously.
So the question is,
It's coming. People want to get out.
The question is, does that bid get pulled once we're reopened? Because everything seems to have front run. There's so much money out there. So that would be.
Exactly. No so one fast knows forward since today.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No one knows it, which is why, as you said, the best protection against not knowing is to diversify, right?
Correct.
To have exposure to different asset classes and different sectors because, okay, now you're not missing anything. You're not going to make a killing by being concentrated in any one thing, but you won't miss out on a big shift. These are long-term shifts, to be clear, right? There's still plenty of time. If we're in a multi-year trend higher for value, this is the very early
stage. But
what's
the best way for a person like me to own value? Through an ETF?
Yeah, I believe so. You could just tilt to it. You don't have to go aggressively into it. You could put a percentage of the portfolio into a value ETF and get exposure there. You know, sectors come and go. Like energy is value now, financials are value now, but that could change. Financials have had a huge run. There's not so much value. So, you know, getting a diversified exposure to that tilt is a protection against. Amazon's a great company. Apple's a great company. We know that.
Everyone knows that.
Everyone knows it. The question is,
it's consensus,
is there going to be a
sucks?
Correct. Cisco was a great company in 2000. It executed pretty well over the next 10 years. Sales more than doubled. They did pretty well. It was just it could not maintain that level of valuation. That's something that we can't predict. So just generally speaking, having exposure to unlikely themes or things that have been beaten down is not a bad thing to have, just to hedge your bet against what's going on today continuing into the future. So on the off chance that the big four, you know, Apple, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft are not the big four 10 years from now, you're going to want to have exposure, not just to outside of U.S. tech, but outside of the U.S. in general, right? International, which has underperformed the U.S. for over 10 years, maybe emerging market exposure, just things that are not fundamentals, that don't have the same fundamental drivers as these big tech names. And not to say they won't do well, they very well could, but on the off chance they don't, I think it's going to be more important to have that just as a risk management tool, really, as a protection against not being able to predict what environment is coming next.
All right, what else do we got, Nikita?
Well, it's a nice segue into the next theme of ours, which is basically what you were saying, Charlie, that the U.S. equity valuations are quite high. And we've had this sell-off recently, but it seems like that it's kind of continuing lower a little bit more. So what are you seeing in terms of like how high the valuations are?
You know, in a historical context, it's hard to appreciate it because it's been a really long run with, of course, we had the crash last year, but that was the fastest. It was the fastest bear market in history, and then also the fastest recovery out of it. So if you blinked, you know, a few months later, we were back at new highs. So it didn't feel like too much for people. But if we look at something like the CAPE ratio, which is developed by Robert Shiller,
yeah.
and he said, let's smooth earnings over a period of time instead of just looking at 1 year's earning. But even if you looked at 1 year's earning, you would find something similar. U.S. equity valuations today, if we just take a snapshot, S&P 500 is higher than any point in history with the exception of 1998 through 2000, right? So just the dot-com era really is higher than today. Now, if we go back to 1998, you'll remember we had some problems there in 1998, a 20% decline, but then stocks continued to run until March of 2000. So it's not to say an overvalued market can certainly get more overvalued, but if we look at historical evidence of valuations this high, what you tend to see is more volatility going forward. You tend to see below average future return. So let's say the average return in the U.S. equity market historically is 10%. Tend to see well below that when stocks are this high on the valuation spectrum. And you tend to see higher drawdowns, so more risk in the portfolio in general. But none of that is a timing indicator, right?
And just on that, I think it's also a bit different this time that, you know, because of COVID, that everybody was sitting at home. And for the first time, you have this inundation of retail participating in the markets. And because they've only seen this, like, you know, crazy bull market of last year, it also seems like, you know, and they come from a very FOMO and a YOLO mentality. And so, you know, as long as the tech stocks were like going higher, they were fine with that. But then the minute they started to crash, they wanted to go into, you know, they went from SPACs to crypto to...
People are getting their drugs.
Yeah.
People just want to play right now, right? Like, it's really fascinating to see the money just get lit on fire.
Yeah.
Not everybody. There's big kids that have moved from Doge to AMC to Bitcoin and pulled money out of each of those. But the amount of suckers at the table, I'm enjoying this as just a fringe trader. Charlie knows I don't trade that often. But as a fringe trader, trading against these extremes has been like taking candy from a baby. And I'm not even a good trader because there's so many new people to be burned, which I think is good. If you can't get burned, how do you learn? Like your son, like your brother wanted to do Dogecoin.
Yeah.
Really should have let him.
I know.
And now he'd be burned, right? But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For a while there, he looked like a king.
Yeah, because he wanted to buy it at 6 cents.
Yeah.
And it so went up to like 68.
And he'd probably still be holding.
Yeah.
And, but at the same point, I don't think there's a way to do it other than learn by doing. And there's never been a better chance to learn by doing, which has been great for me because on the fringe, I'm scalping against people. Not every day, but... You know, even on this crypto thing, I was selling crypto on the way up, getting abused, and then finally the things were down 60-70% over a week, and now you can actually see who the real buyers want to be.
You're buying us lunch today.
I'll buy you lunch. So do you see any problem there, Charlie, with all that speculation just consistently going from asset to asset? Have you ever seen anything like this where the market just continues to power through? I don't understand how it just keeps shaking its head at all this.
Still a lot of demand. There's a portion of that stimulus is being invested, right? So you have that as a backdrop on the bid. But in terms of investor psychology, no, I don't think since 2000, getting back to the valuation thing, that's correlated very much with investor psychology, right? Valuation at the end of the day is just a manifestation of how excited investors are about today, how much they're willing to pay today for a future level of earnings and cash flow. And they're extremely excited. And the rolling bubbles is a fascinating thing. I think it's just we've seen bubbles, right, throughout history. We just haven't seen one after another after
Call
another.
Them tiny bubbles, tiny crashes for the last 6 months.
I think that's the opposite of last year when we were talking. We were calling it the first social media bear market, right? So you had everyone collectively convincing themselves this is the end of the world very quickly, and we had the fastest bear market in history as a result.
Yeah.
Now, on the flip side of that, we've had the fastest manias, right?
Yeah.
Like something like GameStop, I don't believe it could have happened years ago before social. It just wasn't.
No, it's
GameStop,
the true manifestation of the internet and trading. I wouldn't have predicted it's GameStop. Could have been Nordstrom. Could have been Best Buy. Could have been Apple. Could have been anything. Could have been Bitcoin. GameStop
right.
through this whole thing.
Yeah.
Bitcoin's crashed. NFTs have crashed. What else that was a bubble that crashed quickly?
SPACs
crashed. GameStop's up today and near 200.
Yeah.
And what's the common denominator?
I don't know what the common denominator is.
The common denominator is as action, right? Volatility.
Correct. I'm saying GameStop has survived.
Yeah.
DraftKings down 40%. Penn's down 50%. Still up huge off the bottom. But literal crashes in these leading companies, one after the other.
What's driving that behavior, Howard, though, is the sense, it starts with the sense that there isn't risk. I wrote about SPACs a few months ago when we were seeing $1 billion a day in SPACs, $1 billion a day. And we've already far exceeded last year's record. You know, we're at $100 billion now, but it's pretty much grinded to a halt.
Yeah, and we only had 13 in the last month. It halted that quickly.
It halted. But why did it halt? There's a number of reasons, the SEC, things like that. But I think the biggest reason is that now there's risk, right? So they've moved on.
Supply created risk and poor behavior created risk. SPACs are a feature that are here to stay. I'm not defending. Obviously, we own one.
No question. The question was, you know, should they open up 30% higher?
No.
Without an announcement, without anything, right?
Now they're trading at a discount. Yeah. So I'm saying that's what's amazing about GameStop. It's like a UFO. It's just hovering, reeking. You know, I just went to see Jaws this weekend in the movie. It was $5. Rachel and I were just dying to go to a movie, right? Because Harkins here in town is a beautiful movie theater. It's not AMC. I'm here to continually rip AMC because it's a shitty product compared to a good product like Harkins. But we went to see Jaws in the movie theater. Does not hold up. Now, maybe I've seen it too many times. And so obviously I'm not going to be scared. But still incredible acting, blah, blah, blah. What was my point I was going to make? Oh, so Jaws, the point was it just wouldn't go away. It went from the pond, it went to the ocean. It was just like defying Quinn and, you know, the mayor and blah, blah, blah. The shark was doing things that sharks weren't supposed to do. It was hunting the boat. And GameStop's like defying. It's like a great white shark. It's just hovering. It's defied the hedge funds. It's defied the media. It's defied people like me. It's defied fundamentalists. It's defied, you know, and I don't even know who owns it. Who would admit that they own GameStop at $50 billion at this point? Yet it's trading at some ungodly valuation, meaning there's people holding $50 billion worth of GameStop, and it's survived a Bitcoin crash and Ethereum crash and all this stuff. I think it's the most interesting thing that exists today in the asset market.
But that is irrational exuberance.
Charlie, I think so too, but I also think it's some weird
thing. And what Alan and what people say when they hear, people will remind you whenever you hear that phrase that Alan Greenspan said that in 1996, and then the market went on to more than double, maybe even triple over the next few years. Tech stocks definitely more than tripled, you know, from there into the peak in 2000. So no one could predict when that mania is going to end. But generally speaking, when you have risk appetite this high, it's not a bad thing to just lower your expectations. Don't go crazy.
I think that's a good point.
Yeah.
When you see Dogecoin at 87 billion market cap, which was 350x over the last year, and it's higher than 408 companies in the S&P 500, that might be a time to and Elon Musk is going on Saturday Night Live to talk about it. I don't know. Have fun with it. That might be an indication of something.
Well, he said it's a hustle.
33 cents. He said it's a hustle. I think there's waves of irrational exuberance. We'll move on to the next topic. But I don't know how this part ends. I think I've got it right with the tiny bubbles. Like, where there's so much money and so little fear and so much appetite for risk. And so many things are here to stay, whether it's gambling and sports gambling and Robinhood and eToro and Coinbase. You can get your fix. This weekend, while I was golfing, I was buying Solana under Uniswap. These are tickers I hadn't heard of or products I wasn't using 3 months ago. I'm only trading against the machine, basically. There's not enough history to own these.
Right.
But they're all crashing 70, 80%. And I'm on a golf course using a MetaMask wallet to own these things on a Sunday. And I'm 55. I'm the last guy I thought to be doing that, right? And it worked because I was fading a panic on a Sunday. I've never seen a panic on a Sunday afternoon. I think this is fascinating that I didn't have to wait till turnaround Tuesday, which are things that we used to say, like, you know, and now it's like things are bottoming on Sunday at 6 p.m.
It's a 24-hour herd market on up and on the down, right? And so you took advantage of that volatility. To you, that didn't scare you off. To most people, they want to see that volatility on the upside before jumping in, but you went the opposite way. So this herd behavior and the social media phenomenon, that's not going away. That's here to stay. I mean, the last point on that is just a funny thing that you can't not mention it. I mean, Elon Musk, a few months ago, I think it was in January, tweets out, use Signal. this messaging app.
Yeah.
And everyone goes and buys this company that has nothing, you know, this private company, they buy and drive it up to $1 billion valuation within a few days. And even after they realize it's not that company, still going higher.
Did Signal come back to Earth?
It did come down. Yes. It was as high as I think 75 or 80. Now it's trading at $1. It was 60 cents before the spike. So it didn't come all the way back down.
I think a similar thing happened when Zoom went off as well last year. There was a similar Zoom.
Z-O-O-M. Yeah. And it was all criminals.
Yeah.
And they had to shut it down. So again, I love it. More people, more action, more volatility, more, what do you call it? Edge case opportunities. More reasons for people. Like I call this is the beginning of the investing class, you know, where I have two choices with my money. Give it to the government or give it to the kids. I'm like Trump at this point. If you don't like your kids, you're going to give it to your kids because your other choice is give it to Biden and Trump. And we know what that's going to do. They're just throwing around numbers. They don't know this stuff. No human can understand the trillions that these people are talking about, let alone these two. So you have two choices. And so this is why I keep saying, I love my kids, so no big deal. But it's stressful to give all your money to 20-year-olds, even if you control it. So you might as well teach them how to invest.
Yeah.
So that becomes more valuable than learning how to handle a firearm, which is my big, right? Like, so we need a gun. No, they need to learn how to invest. And they need to have friends around the world because they need to have the power to flee, right? Which is another thing. Like, that's a God-given gift that crypto has.
Now you're
given
talking
us.
About the reopening trade, like in real.
No, I'm talking about, the real reopening trade is build a network because you never know when you're going to have to go. Look at you. You can come to the US and you work in the US. Like there's never been a better opportunity. So what was the next thing that we're going to let Charlie quickly riff on before we go?
Well, we were basically, we kind of covered it all. I think the only thing maybe bonds seems like.
So my take on bonds, Charlie, tell me this because I refuse to own them. Is that because I'm old or is there something else going on? Because if I refuse to own them, can it be like the value trade of 14-year bear? Like, or are we just getting into the era where bonds could just become
a
shitty asset?
I think you're right on that. And a year ago, if you remember, we were talking about 10-year at 30 basis points and QQQ is yielding over 1%. So yeah, next 10 years,
right.
What do you want to own?
And I was just pissed because I was in bonds and I took all that volatility but didn't have the upside to go with it during a panic.
Yeah.
So now you have a situation here in bonds that's not like, you had a 40-year bull market in bonds. 40 years, a long time. You had 10-year yields in the mid-teens in 1980, and they come all the way down to all-time lows last year. And where we are today, 1.6% versus 4% inflation, that's a very difficult and different environment for a bond investor, right?
Yeah.
You have years and years and years, bond investors, decades in the 1980s, they earned 6% above inflation. 1990s, 4% above inflation.
Got it.
Even the 2000s to 2020.
So now they're underwater. Got it.
Yeah. Now you're not keeping up. Inflation could come back down to 2%, but
still not a great trade.
It's a very difficult trade. It's a very different environment for bond investors until things change, right? But you have this dynamic where we're creating a lot of dollars. We're issuing more bonds. We're going to probably borrow a few trillion more this year. You have so much supply that's coming onto the market. If the Fed decides not to keep buying, a trillion a year, and last year, they, of course, 3 trillion.
Rates could just shoot through the roof.
Rates could start to normalize. And then bonds have a different role in someone's portfolio.
Correct.
Problem is, they've always been the buffer, right? They've always been the asset class where you got at least paid to wait if equities weren't compelling. And now it's viewed differently. You either can hide in cash, right, which is paying you nothing, but you don't have that downside risk if interest rates rise. Or you could reach for yields, which is not usually advisable, right? High yield bonds. If you look at the biggest junk bond ETF right now, HYG, it's yielding 3.4%.
Oy, unbelievable.
I mean, you used to earn that in a money market fund. Before 2007, you would earn that in a risk-free money market fund, right? So you really have to reach to get any sort of yield. And then if there's any defaults or there's any spread widening, you're gonna be underwater on that risky bond position. So there's not a lot of easy answers for bond investors other than be patient, probably go shorter duration, which is what we've been doing. But investors can't go 100% into risk just because interest rates are low. I don't advise that.
I think that's the lesson. I'm not saying they shouldn't or won't, but that's what I've learned from this post-crash rebound. It's so tempting to be 100% risk. I'm barbell, so I'm like high cash, high risk, and no bonds. But I understand that bonds can tamper and you've gone shorter term duration. But I got to think that is still, to me, the hidden nightmare for America is the bond market.
Yeah.
Well, it just set that perfect dynamic, right, for crypto and Bitcoin last year. You know, you're getting the stimulus payment and they're making it easy for you on these apps to just buy crypto. You know, you put your stimulus direct. Are you going to buy crypto or buy something that's giving you a 0% yield? You're going to be more likely to speculate. And so to me, last year, there was never a better story for why Bitcoin should exist, right? Given what the government and the Fed were doing, if they're going to be irresponsible with what they're doing, then there has to be an alternative.
Yeah. And I just added it to my 8-80. Well, I've added it forever, but we're finally showing clients, you know, how to do it in this crash. Because that didn't just appear and will disappear forever. That thing is now, much like GameStop, more real in my sense. It's just the hand's been shown. It'll be ugly and volatile for the next 6 months to a year, maybe 2 years, but like it's not going away. It's the great white shark. The digital great white shark is still Bitcoin and the descendants of Bitcoin. All right, I'm going to let you go. Thanks, buddy. We got to have you back. But I think, you know, you came on early. We talked through the panic. I think this thesis is asset allocation for most people does have a place in everyone's portfolio. Nothing works consistently forever. The consensus trade has become big brands, big tech, 8-80. I'm trying to come up with different theses around 8-80 to go smaller. We've added AdYen and some other different payments companies. And Charlie and I have been thinking through what the new 8-80 brands are. But like nothing works forever. That's the point. And just when you least expect it, markets change. So hopefully we'll have you back soon. I learned a lot. Great. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Excellent. Charlie.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Have a good one.
All right. There you have it. How'd you do?
Great.
All right. Well, how do you think she did?
I think she did great as usual.
Are we going to hold off on any praise or negativity? I think that was fun.
Okay. Thank you.
So we're going to wrap it up. It's summertime. Or is it summer yet?
Yes.
All right. So it's summertime. So we expect people to be outside, listen to podcasts less, but hope everybody enjoyed. This is Panic with Friends. We talk with my friends that happen to be venture capitalists, money managers, traders, investors, founders, trying to live a little bit in the future. Talk about markets, how we make a little quick buck or a long-term buck. You can go to Spotify or Apple, subscribe. Just search my name, Howard Lindzen, or StockTwits or Panic with Friends. Subscribe. You'll get a podcast once a week. We drop them on Thursdays. And thanks for tuning in, everybody. See you guys.